Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Before sunrise, Burn Dairy and Deli is preparing to fuel your day with hot coffee, donuts, muffins, breakfast sandwiches, and other morning staples. For lunch, grab a giant deli sandwich made the way you like it. Pizza, wings, wraps, or a fresh salad. Plus, something to wash it down. Then pick up dinner or a sweet treat and other pantry essentials. Now you can get your Burn Dairy and Deli favorites delivered with DoorDash. All day, every day, you can count on Burn Dairy and Deli. It's all good.
Hey, this is Linda Cohn from ESPN, and you're listening to the ML Sports Platter.
Back with you. Happy holidays to one and all. I'm Mike Lindsley. Hit me on Twitter, at Mike L Sports, and we are all over the place, man. Google, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, Deezer. Make sure you put in for that download, subscription, and a five-star review. For example, on Apple phones, just go to your purple podcast button, tap that, go to the search tool, and just type in ML Sports Platter. You will get instantly delivered to your cell phone new and archived episodes of the show. We are brought to you by our great friends at Stanley Law Offices, Burn Dairy, Brian Comboy of Mass Mutual New York State, and Axe Exotic Pets. If you're in and around Central New York, you need that exotic pet. They've got special birds and snakes and a lot more. They have all the amenities, big fish tanks, you name it, they've got it. Lizards, chameleons, it's all there. Axe Exotic Pets, that's A-C-K apostrophe S, Axe Exotic Pets on Facebook. Go check them out for all their holiday specials, hours, and much, much more. Axe Exotic Pets. Tip of the cap, thank you as well to the Whitaker and Swan families for their support of the platform. So in this podcast, I'm going to break down the Bills and Saints game from Thanksgiving solely. It's just an all-game recap. And I'm going to, you know, kind of give a little good, a little bad, a little ugly. And we'll kind of give a little bit here as I record this the day after. You'll hear it on Monday of Patriots Week. Kind of get a sneak preview into that game as well, even though we're waiting as I record this for the Patriots to play the Titans. Matchup-wise, a lot of things will still be the same. So let's dive into it. The good is obviously the Bills were in dire straits. They were in desperate need of a win. They got it. Albeit against a bad team, they got it, right? They had to have this game, whether really, really good number one player, you know, 1A players were in there or not. They had to go and take care of business. They did it in a hostile environment, in prime time, on a short week after they got run over by the Colts. Those are all good, positive things for the Buffalo Bills, and they can build off of that, I think, without question. Couple of more things that were really good takeaways from this game. Defensively, obviously, I know, again, inferior offense on the Saints side of things. By no means does Trevor Siemian or Tony Jones Jr. or, you know, Lil Jordan Humphrey, do they strike fear in the hearts of defenders? But the defense did dominate. I mean, they played a pretty sound football game. Other than once in a while, I don't know what the deal is, but the corners, you know, they kind of leave a little too much cushion for receivers, whether, you know, they're one in, you know, number ones, number twos, if they're role players, whatever. It seems to me there's still a lot of openness when the Bills defend the pass. And clearly, this was not a great offensive line. You didn't have Jonathan Taylor. So the cards were stacked in your favor. There's no doubt about it. But again, taking care of business, playing against an inferior team. The Bills defense came to play. I thought Matt Milano was outstanding, and really we haven't seen a ton of the great Matt Milano, right? Like the exceptional Matt Milano that we've come to know as Bills fans. The blow-up plays, the coverage, etc., tons of tackles. Like, we need more Matt Milano like that game against the Saints. He had 8 total tackles, 1 for loss. He had 5 solo tackles in that total. So good game for him. It was great to have Tremaine Edmonds back. If you're a Bills fan, he had 8 tackles, 5 of which were solo. But the best defender was Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver had 4 total tackles, 2 of which were solo, but he had 2 for loss, and he had a sack, and he blew up another huge play in which Mario Addison was then, excuse me, they gave Oliver a half a sack. Mario Addison then was given, actually, hang on one second, I read the wrong column, that's where that started. Ed Oliver, 4 tackles total, 3 were solo, and he had a half a sack in the game, but he blew up another one in which Mario Addison ended up getting the sack. Now, Mario Addison was really good in terms of getting to the quarterback, but he just can't seem to make tackles or finish plays. And that's what we saw even on, the Hail Murray play last year in Arizona, where Addison was chasing Kyler Murray, just couldn't quite get there, couldn't quite disrupt him just enough. Well, that's kind of the same way as when you're, bear hugging a quarterback and you can't bring him down. Nevertheless, Addison was very active. He was really, really good overall. So Oliver, I would put 1, Addison at 2. I'd probably throw, a Matt Milano, Tremaine Edmonds, Jordan Poyer, who had a pick late, Micah Hyde, all those guys sort of lumped in there right after Oliver and Addison in terms of their performance. But the Bills, they got a couple of turnovers in this game. No surprise, obviously. Actually, the Poyer interception, I guess, was the only one. F.A. Obada had a half a sack in this game, right? Like, that's a great thing for Buffalo. They were missing Star Lotulelei again. They split time with Harrison Phillips and rotated him in with F.A. Obada, and Harrison Phillips was solid. Again, I think this is a game for the Bills where they need to just take it and just build from it. I don't think you can tell a ton from this game, but those were the good things. A couple more good things to add to the group. Josh Allen, we'll get to the bad Josh Allen in a second. And there's always good, bad Josh Allen, right? When he's playing more like 2019 than 2020. But the good Josh Allen was he was extremely accurate for the most part. I mean, he only had 5 passes that were not complete. 23 of 28 for 260 yards and 4 touchdowns. His QBR was 75.9 and his rating was above 115. So if you look at those numbers, obviously in today's pass-happy offensive-centric league, you would say to yourself, wow, Josh Allen really didn't have a great game. But he had a solid game outside the 2 picks. 260 yards, yeah, it's not 360, it's not 460. But the efficiency of Josh Allen working the offense in was certainly a good thing to see. Stephon Diggs obviously looked really good when targeted. I thought it was great that they went to him in the beginning of the game. They got the early lead. But then they kind of, had a drive stalled, and then they didn't really go right back to the well and go to Diggs, which is, to me, it's absurd because Stephon Diggs is your best player. I mean, I think he's the best player for the Buffalo Bills at any position. And this year, certainly, I think he's a better receiver than Josh Allen, even as a quarterback. And I think Stephon Diggs needs to be targeted 15, 20 times a game minimum. I mean, I just think that's how it should be. He had 7 catches for 74 yards and a touchdown. For me, and my money, that's still not enough. It's not. Gabe Davis, a couple of catches, 47 yards total. Cole Beasley had 5 quiet catches for 46 yards. Dawson Knox, huge game, 3 for 32 and 2 touchdowns. And that's, some of the good there was Diggs when he was targeted, when he created space, when he needed to make plays for this Bills offense. He did, certainly in the good category. Same with Gabe Davis. Dawson Knox, same deal, was a threat in the red zone. Probably should have had 3 touchdowns, right, in this game. Those were the good things, for me. The Bills, I thought, special teams-wise, Isaiah McKenzie was the healthy scratch, and Marquez Stevenson got in there. He did fumble a ball, but he recovered quickly. You know, Tyler Bass was fine. Didn't get a ton of work other than kickoffs because, as you know, the Bills scored 4 touchdowns in this game for 28 points. And then the other 3, of course, was a Bass field goal. But he continues to have a very, very good year. And I think that pretty much covers it for the good in this game. Now, the bad is Josh Allen still seems to me like he's a little bit of a lost puppy. I think that that can be attributed to a mix of different things. Number one, without question, you have the target on your back, right? With all the pressure, all the expectations, the contract, the endorsements in the offseason, the Super Bowl picks, the MVP picks, all that stuff. When that stuff happens in sports and you have all that pressure, people are coming after you. There's also a lot of tape on Josh Allen, right? Like last year had a great year. The better you become, the more tape is out there. And that means, you know, the better you become, then there's more preparation against you. There are so many factors into this thing. Josh Allen also is getting, you know, no help from his offensive line, which has been extremely banged up all year. It has not been a cohesive, consistent unit. They've had the issues with Spencer Brown and the Corona. They've had the injury with John Feliciano. That is an offensive line that is absolutely atrocious right now. I mean, when you look at some of these plays, Allen has absolutely no time. He'll go back and you'll be like one Mississippi, and you can't even finish one Mississippi, and the guy is absolutely getting pressured and rolled into and all that. Allen, I thought, did a decent job running out of the pocket, avoiding contact on slides and such, but he did take a beating in other areas. I mean, a real beating. He just still, for me, still takes too many hits. Part of that is Allen. Part of that's the offensive line. You know, there should have been a penalty on a Saints defender where he, you know, kind of side headbutted Allen and, you know, taunted him a little bit. That was BS. But that is something, you know, Allen seems as though, like, on the road, hostile environments, and I talked about this in the preseason, you know, you wondered how, I mean, look, yeah, has he played in big games before? Sure. Have all these guys played in big games before? Sure. But I think coming off of what we did last year into, like, the normal atmospheres that we were used to, there is a transition period, and Allen has historically, and I say historically using it light because, you know, he hasn't been in the league that long, but his recent history has been that he has a major, 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 major problem with a ton of noise. You could see his hands up to the helmet. He's kind of all over the place. He looked like he was guessing a few times, certainly in the first half when the Bills offense went cold, and a few times in the second half. So I don't know what you do there. You can practice for it. You can, you know, prepare with sound noise, noise added, you know, machines and all that in practice. But the fact of the matter is that that's just a game situation. And Allen's going to have to figure out a way to get past the hostile environment and noise, because let's be honest, if this Bills team continues to stay together and Allen is the quarterback, they're going to probably be in the playoffs a few more times. And I would guarantee you that they're going to have to go on the road a good many times to win, you know, games in the postseason. In fact, this year, it's pretty much a guarantee that they'll probably have to go on the road at least once, unless something wild happens where they win out, you know, and get home field advantage, which I don't see happening. Other bad things, again, O-line is just really, really bad. There's no doubt. In fact, I left one thing out in the good category that affects the bad and the ugly. 10 days off now, the Bills will rest and relax and train and prepare for the New England Patriots for a Monday Night Football game on the 6th of December in Orchard Park. That'll be a wild atmosphere. That's certainly a good, because I'm thinking that by that point, Spencer Brown, John Feliciano, the two most important guys for the Bills offensive line, they'll be in there. You've got 10 days to prepare. Obviously, you know, Bill Belichick has, you know, kind of a little bit longer as well, I guess, because he plays on a Sunday and they don't, you know, play until they loop around on Monday. Belichick in New England, they have a recipe for the Bills. There is a recipe that's out there to beat the Bills, and it's run the football and get your defense in Josh Allen's face and expose the offensive line. That's how you beat the Bills right now. And from there, you close gaps, you do this, you do that. You know, Belichick has played a ton of zone this year, which you don't see a lot of in his history. He's usually doing, if it's in Super Bowl 25, it's a 2-9 gap to take away an offense. It's different blitzing and man-to-man stuff. It's scheming. So he's really implemented a lot of stuff into his defense. That's the formula to beat the Bills. You run the football. You play very smart offensively. You control the time of possession, the clock, etc. Your defense, is there to help win the game. You run the football and you win a 20-14 game, a 17-13 type game. So the recipe is out there to try and beat the Bills. I think everybody has the blueprint. The Titans had it. The Colts had it. The Patriots certainly have it. So that's how that goes. But, having 10 days off is a big deal for the Bills, at least to get some people back. I think there's a lot of nicks and knacks on the team as well, roster-wise, bodies, little minor injuries here, there, and in between. I think it'll be good for a Cole Beasley. It'll be good for a Stephon Diggs. It'll be good for a Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. It'll be good for a veteran like Jerry Hughes. 10 days off, that's a long time before you have to play again. So that's a good one. Obviously, with the O-line being so bad, that good has to impact the bad, because eventually, if they don't get Spencer Brown and if they don't get Spencer Brown and John Feliciano back, this team isn't going anywhere anyway. As far as other bad things, probably just the fact that even though the Bills, were up 10-0 at the half and it felt like they were up 21, 24, 27 points, it felt like there was no way the Saints could overcome things with the Bills. They're just not a good football team, and they just don't have any weapons right now, despite the fact that Sean Payton's a great, great head coach. No great, great head coach has done it without great, great players. And frankly, no great players have done it without head coaches. It's a puzzle. It's a puzzle of a couple of different pieces in terms of trying to win a championship. But Sean Payton, clearly, you can tell that offense. You missed Drew Brees. Now, last year, Drew Brees was not great. Congrats to him, by the way, getting honored in New Orleans at halftime. I thought he was actually pretty good on color too. I thought he really brought a lot to the table and was awesome in the game. And on a drive with Josh Allen, I remember, the Bills should have taken a timeout and then two strikes at the end zone. They did not do that. I think that was late first half, maybe. And Brees commented on that. I thought that was a very, very good observation, for the color commentator and future Hall of Famer in Drew Brees. I'm pretty sure that was in the first half. Because I think it was the Tyler Bass field goal, basically, and the Bills were having all kinds of problems with the clock, I think, with, four and a half, 5 minutes-ish to go, and they ended up getting a field goal before they broke the game open with two touchdowns in the third quarter and then another touchdown in the fourth. So that, for me, pretty much covers the good and the bad. The ugly is Trey White. As I record this, I don't know what will happen. Unfortunately, a lot of things on Twitter that were circulating, this might be a really serious injury, like an ACL. He was in coverage and sort of, kind of hyperextended the knee, and it looked to me maybe like, it buckled a little bit, and then he had gone down. Maybe it was an extension, hyperextension, a pull, something of that magnitude. It didn't appear to be in front of my eyes, and I've torn my ACL. I know exactly what that feels like, and you could see the pain on his face, the frustration on his face. He left and didn't obviously return, but it didn't look to me like Trey White had injured his ACL. Normally, ACL injuries look much different than that, I think, as far as, somebody coming down, especially on an offensive lineman, on their leg and bending, the knee and really just kind of crushing it to a certain extent. Sometimes a player makes a move, goes up for a layup or makes a wide receiver move and plants it, you know, plants the foot, and all of a sudden the knee, like, buckles, but you can kind of see more of a, you know, more of a bending down and kind of a collapse of the knee, where this one kind of hyperextended up and then kind of sat down. So clearly he could have torn the ACL that way too, but it just didn't, to me, in real time and even on the replays, it didn't look like that. Is all I'm saying. So, you know, look, hopefully Trey White is okay because this is obviously a huge loss for the Bills. I mentioned the offensive line that is a disaster with problems with this football team. After the offensive line, you probably could make an argument for either the running game being piss poor, even though they got, you know, last game against the Saints, they did get, 113 total yards on the ground, but they had to hand the ball off 32 times to get it, you know, Singletary, I don't know, they kept going back to the well with the running game and forcing it, and I don't know, you know, is Sean McDermott telling Brian Daboll to run it, you know, we got to run, if we don't run the ball, we're not going to win, but when you're throwing the ball and you attack and you get first downs, you got the defense now on their heels. They have no idea what's coming at you. Is it a slant to Diggs? Is it deep to Sanders? Is it over the top to Gabe Davis? Is it to Dawson Knox in the red zone? Is it going to be maybe even a draw play? But if you throw right away on first down again, you keep them, you know, you keep them guessing. You keep them having to work to stop your talented wide receiver core. It makes no sense to go like, oh, well, just got a first down, huge momentum. Let's say it was a third and eight, boom, then they go right back to the running game. So that part of it's frustrating. I'm not saying that you don't need a running game. I'm saying that you do need a semblance of a running game. But in certain spots, when the passing game is there pretty much every single time and you're playing against an inferior opponent when you have the opportunity to blow the game open, keep throwing the ball. You know, like, keep throwing the ball. It is, you know, according to so many reports, it is out there, though, that the team is fearing a potential season-ending injury. So we'll have to just keep monitoring this. As you hear this podcast, the injury may have already been announced. But many are speculating it to be an ACL injury, and certainly from the face, the look of Trey White and the pain he was in, there's no doubt that something serious happened. Dr. Chow observed White's disappointment with Buffalo's medical team, and he said, quote, unfortunately, fears of ACL escalated. And, you know, it was tight coverage on Marquez Callaway, and he just, you know, started limping after a routine play. Dr. Chow also had mentioned, quote, the Bills star corner suffered a knee injury, and by the video, there was worry for an ACL tear. White down on the field, the Bills training staff performed the Lachman test on his left knee, which is an on-field test for an ACL tear. The LSU alum went into the blue tent before heading to the locker room and eventually being ruled out. So he's from the area. This was a big deal for Trey White. It was a primetime Thanksgiving game. You know, he's back home. I tell you what, I really feel for this guy, man. You know, he's been a great player for the Bills. He's a number one corner. He's a great guy in the locker room. He's got a ton of energy, and he's a part of what they're doing. And, man, you hate to lose him. I mean, after the offensive line woes, you could probably argue, you know, the running game and then the, you know, pass rush secondary. And what's, you know, if you lined up the Bills' problems, where would the corner spots be? I'd probably put it fourth if Trey White's in there. If he's not, I think you could argue it to be number two, because there's two reasons for that. Number one, you got to be able to cover people. But number two, because the Bills' defensive pass rush is so helter-skelter, their guys are left on an island a lot. And oh, by the way, the Bills' corners, as I mentioned and alluded to earlier in the podcast, they tend to give cushion to wide receivers. I don't know what it is. It doesn't matter the game. It doesn't matter how good the wide receiver is. It doesn't matter if it's a 1A, a 1-1A, 2-2A, 2-2B. It doesn't matter. They continue to just give yards to the other team in terms of, okay, quick strike, boom, 5-6 yards. That has got to somehow tighten up for the Bills, and it ain't going to tighten up if Trey White isn't in there. You know, so this is a huge problem. Levi Wallace, Dane Jackson, that's not, you know, a Super Bowl contending cornerback duo. There are a lot of teams out there who don't have a Super Bowl contender duo, and they're still Super Bowl contenders. But in the case of the Buffalo Bills, this is just another layer to add into some of the problems that they have. I think the Bills, it's a two-sided coin when you play a team like the Saints in a game like this, and you're a solid, really solid team, and they're just not. You know, the one hand is, hey, play the game, play the schedule, need the win, beat them, hostile environment, blah, blah, blah. Then the other half is there still are a lot of problems with this Bills team. And I am in a position, though, where I think that the Bills were so much better off playing on the short week because it showed, hey, quick turnaround, we got to get a win back and move on, as opposed to the other thinking, which is, oh, short week, we don't have time to prepare it and get on the practice field. And da-da. This was a perfect opponent to beat in a short week. You know, it's not a conference opponent. The Bills' four losses are all to AFC East teams. They've got to start correcting that. And the 10 days now to prepare, that's the big, big thing. It's another Monday primetime game. Then you go into a short week again that following Sunday. But you got to take care of business at home against New England Patriots. The Jacksonville Jaguars' loss for the Bills is becoming more and more of a problem. When you look at the AFC standings, boy, in the NFL, when you get to this time of year, 8-3 looks a lot different than 7-4, doesn't it? You know, I mean, it's kind of like the 6-5, you know, looks a lot different than 7-4. And when you look at the AFC standings, we have the Titans playing the Patriots this week. We have the, you know, again, as you hear this and as I record it, these games have not taken place yet. You know, Titans and Patriots, like, who do you want? Because if the Patriots win, they're in first place. If they lose, the Bills are probably percentage points ahead, only because it would be one, you know, the Bills have played at that point one less game, and the Patriots would have lost one more game at 7-5. They'll either be 8-4, 7-5. If the Titans win it, they're 9-3 and now have a two-game lead plus tiebreaker over the Bills. But as a Bills fan, don't you want the division, because you don't want to deal with that all offseason when New England's back, New England won, New England, you know, you had your fun for a year. Like, I don't know if you want that as a Bills fan. Maybe take your chances on, well, look, we have to go on the road anyway in the postseason, at least one game if we don't get the home field, whether that's at Arrowhead, at Tennessee again, at Baltimore, at New England. I mean, who knows what it is. But, you know, I'd rather go on the road as a division champ than as a wild card for sure. And so I think it's important for the Bills to capture the division. And that's why I would say, you know, Bills fans, you got to root against New England. But you have big, you know, look at these, teams now, right? Like Indianapolis, 6-5, they have a tiebreaker against the Bills if they end up tying. Kansas City now has 7 wins. The Chargers, 6-4. Now they're back a little bit. A couple of teams that have pulled back to the pack, Denver Broncos being one of them and the Pittsburgh Steelers being another. You know, the Pittsburgh Steelers now, really, I mean, look, they tied the Detroit Lions, which is absolutely embarrassing. And then they got beat by the Chargers on the road in a shootout, on prime time. So the Steelers have come back a little bit. They have a tie break against the Bills as well. So it's important for the Bills, again, to keep staying ahead of the likes of, you know, Pittsburgh, KC, etc. You know, I think Baltimore could be a problem in the playoffs. That's a physical team. Lamar's tough. The Chiefs, their defense is really coming on, and that offense never goes away. Until the Chiefs are dethroned, you know, you always have to watch out for them, right? Big game, again, Browns and Ravens. Is that a game, if you're a Bills fan, that you want to have, you know, the Browns win, but then all of a sudden they're 7-5 with the same win total as the Bills? Or do you want to have the Ravens lose, Ravens win 8-3, and then put the Browns back at 500, 8-3 for the Ravens? Somebody's got to win that division. It's either them or the Bengals, right? And so, and I guess Pittsburgh's still in it, of course, because they're only a couple games behind. But one of those teams has to win the division. I don't think if you're a Bills fan, I don't think you want to see, well, now with the Ravens at 7-3, we want to see the, you know, Bengals win the division and then the Ravens get the wild card, or the Steelers, you know, if they get up there a little bit, even if they improve their wild card status and the Bills are our wild card, well, the Steelers are going to have a better seed because they beat the Bills in week one. So These are all the things you have to pay attention to in the NFL. But that loss to the Jaguars is killer because the Bills would be 8-3 right now, which is equal to Tennessee. They would be one of the two best teams record-wise in the AFC. And certainly the tiebreak will go to Tennessee, but they'd be right there. And frankly, the Bills would be 8-3 with a lot of other teams in the NFL as well. I mean, you know, we still have to wait for all the games to be played, but, you know, they would be right there, you know, right just behind the Arizona Cardinals, for example. You know, just one game behind as I record this, right? So, you know, and you've got Green Bay 8-3 before they head into their game this week. So there's, again, you'll lose a game like that against Jacksonville. I'm not saying that games aren't different in preparation and thinking. I know that coaches and players try to tell you, oh, we prepare every week for the same way, but you don't, because you prepare for different coaches, possibly a road game, different players. Are there injuries, different schemes? Is the team hot? Are they doing something different? Are you healthy or unhealthy? You know, and sometimes the Jaguars, it's not as much juice as, you know, at Arrowhead, right? And playing the two-time AFC defending champion in a Super Bowl team from 2 years ago in the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, games aren't the same in terms of the importance and the hype and fan interest. It's different. And so I understand you can lay an egg once in a while against an inferior opponent, but under no circumstance should the Buffalo Bills be losing to the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's absolutely inexcusable. It's absurd, and it's continuing to hurt them this season because look at the playoff positioning. They could be a game up on a lot of teams. They could be tied right there with the Tennessee Titans, you know, before they play the New England Patriots. If the Bills were 8-3 right now, you probably would root, I think, for New England in the game, right? Because that means that you would keep the Titans back a little bit. You'd have an even record. They'd still have the tiebreak. New England with 8 wins, you're 8-3, but then they're 8-4. You still have percentage points higher, and then you play them Monday night. If you can beat them there and then move to 9-3, now all of a sudden you've created some space between you and the Patriots, and you're right on the heels of the Titans. I think if the Bills were 8-3, I think you would root for the New England Patriots. But in this particular spot, I don't think you do, because you're even with New England. And then the last thing you want to do as a Bills fan is deal with the Patriot thing, certainly the rest of this year and in the offseason. So that's some of the good, some of the bad, some of the ugly from the win over the New Orleans Saints. The Bills will take on the New England Patriots December 6th. That's a primetime Monday night football game. Boy, I'm here for it. It's going to be a wild, crazy atmosphere in Orchard Park without a doubt. And we know that the Patriots are one of those teams in the NFL that's got a major blueprint to stop and slow down the Buffalo Bills. They've got the running game. They've got the defense, time of possession, clock, all the schemes, the best head coach. So we'll see how that game goes. But the Bills have 10 days to prepare for them. And, man, as I record this, we await the Trey White news. And the Bills hope to get, you know, linemen back and hopefully Dane Jackson and some of the other corners extra reps if Trey White is going to be out for a good chunk of time. Mike Lindsley with you. It's the ML Sports Platter all over the major platforms. Go ahead and download, subscribe, leave feedback, and a 5-star review. We're on Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Deezer, iHeartMedia, Amazon Music, you name it. Download, subscribe, leave feedback, and a 5-star review. A big thanks to Syracuse Fitness Store, the Allen Angus Pub, and your State Farm agent, Matt Graham. Get a free rate quote today if you are in and around the great state of New York. SyracuseInsuranceAgent.com. Auto, home, life, bank, health, and business. And by the way, ask Matt about the rate drop that State Farm recently introduced a couple of months ago. A tip of the cap thank you as well to Heather Saxton of Hunt Real Estate, Barks and Rec Doggy Daycare, and our great friends over at Brewerton Ace Hardware. Stop by if you're in and around Central New York, Route 11, just before the Brewerton Bridge. They've got it all, man, inside and outside amenities. They've got your grills. They've got your pizza ovens. They have shovels and garbage cans and much more, and they carry a lot of awesome product from local vendors, barbecue sauces, wing sauces, pickles, jerky, you name it. So get on over to Brewerton Ace Hardware, the helpful place. Go ahead and log on to acehardware.com. Search your location, and away you go at Brewerton Ace Hardware. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Lindsley. As I always tell you, enjoy the games. We'll be right back.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.